see the leaves falling from the trees up on the ground. How do you live with yourself and the conscience you own? Look at your reflection in the mirror. Do you like what you see? In the darkest hour, do you know who you can count on now? 'Cause I just want to know.
Listening to KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado, and that was Poker Face. And for some reason, the album did not play what it says it's playing on that number, but it's a good album, all of it. So, and this is community supported radio, and we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of TruthQuest, they're now available at www.givemesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And I'm Melody, and this is TruthQuest. And tonight I have a special guest, William Roberts, and he has with him tonight Jim Lovell. And William has a program on RBN Republic Broadcasting Network that's on the internet, and he does a lot of research and does a really fine program with some really great information. And tonight we're going to talk about the international building codes and how they tie into the Agenda 21. And then we've also got Jim, who's been kind of a victim of those building codes. And are you two there, Jim and William?
Good evening, Melody. I'm certainly here with you, Jim.
I'm half here.
And let me, before I go any further, I'm going to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and now are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And one other thing is support for KHEN and TruthQuest is brought to you by Kevin Barnes, agent for Land Property, Inc.'s Little River Ranch, offering beautiful land home packages with underground utilities and river access just 3 miles from historic downtown Salida. Find out more at coloradohomeproperties.com or call Kevin at 719-207-0858. William, would you like to go ahead and get a little bit more into your background and then maybe a little bit with Jim's as well, or introduce him and let him do it for himself, whichever?
Certainly. Well, my name again is William Roberts. I am a broadcast host on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Monday through Friday, I do a broadcast called Become Vocal Local. And Become Vocal Local is a political activism broadcast where, when I realized the depths of the matrix that is being unleashed through Agenda 21, the United Nations, the international community, the International Monetary Fund, and the various and sundry agencies. I was compelled to put this broadcast together and get it on the air. And this talk that we're going to talk about tonight, the Hazard Mitigation Planning System, the International Building Code System, the International Code Councils in general, all precede this broadcast that I do by several years. I'm looking at a radio address that I gave on October the 15th, 2006, with the Straight Talk broadcast with Jerry Hughes down in out of Florida. And we were talking about the international the International Property Maintenance Code and Agenda 21. And before that broadcast, shortly before that broadcast, I was also interviewed on a another network with the Sam and Trish Britton with the Information Corner, and we talked about this topic. And prior to that, I was on with Derry Brownfield one morning, and we were talking about this topic, the International Property Maintenance Code, and how it ties into Agenda 21 and sustainable development. And that's how Jim and I got to basically know of each other, because Jim heard that broadcast, and since that time has gotten in contact with me. And so I understand his side of the story a little bit. He'll tell us more about it tonight. And my side of the story is basically many, many years of independent research, and I come from a construction land use background. And so most of the material that we're going to talk about today and this evening, I have had previous professional experience in, as well as from a research standpoint. But at the time that I was implementing it, I didn't understand it anywhere near quite as well as I did tonight. Jim?
Yes. Well, my background is all technical, to the extreme in some cases, instrumentation, engineering, electronics, and such as that. And my parents got a hold of me when I was a youngster and found out what was in my textbook and gave me a whole bunch of readings to do, about 30 different things. So I have this historical perspective. And one of the books was The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith and various other things. So I see things from a little different perspective, but I think we're looking at the same monster. Will, anybody?
Well, I'll let you go ahead, Will, and kind of... you're a little more familiar with Jim here, so I'll let you get kind of direct it from that point.
Okay. All right. Now, audience, if you have a if you have a pen and a pencil, a pen or a paper handy, do get it close to you. I'm going to give you some things that you're going to want to look into in your own area. Become vocal local. Again, it's all about becoming vocal local. It's what we can do right where we are. We don't have to try and go to Washington, D.C. to demonstrate and march and all of that thing. There are many things that are happening right where we are that we need to be aware of. And I'll just simply start this way. Chaffee County is basically a controlled zone. I went on the Internet and went through my standard repertoire of sites, and you guys are in deep trouble. You're up to your eyeballs in so many things that most of you may not have any idea that you're involved with. But let me just start out. We're going to talk tonight about the International Code Council. And so if you want to find out where to go on the Internet to find out more about that, you can go to www.iccsafe.org, iccsafe.org. James Lee Witt, former director of FEMA, is CEO and chairman of the International Code Council Foundation, and they're working in kind of partnerships, I believe, with FEMA in a long-handed arrangement to bring about a new system of codes to alter the relationship that you have with your property. And your county and your town are up to your necks and eyeballs in these code adoptions, and you need to be very much aware of them. They alter your relationship with your property. Now, additionally, you also have phase one compliance with the enhanced 911 system. Now, you're completely surrounded by 911 counties, but at this point you have less than five wireless carriers, and so you're in a phase one, less than five carrier compliance status with the enhanced 911 system, and you're going to find out more about that and why that's important in a moment. Basically, you can go to your Department of Local Affairs, DOLA, website. It's the Colorado Division of Emergency Management, www.dola.state.county.us. It's dola.state.co.us. And on that website, you can go in on the left-hand side when that opens, click on the mitigation link. It's on the left-hand side in the hot buttons. Click on the mitigation link, and you'll see that it'll open it up, and it'll show you that Chaffee County has a hazard mitigation plan. You also have a Chaffee County Planning Commission. You have smart code, zoning regulations, and all of these things are the product of a chain of tyranny that begins early on. Sometimes it begins with a house fire or a rooming house fire or some local disaster, and the cry goes out, the sheriff is overwhelmed, the first responders are overwhelmed, the cry goes out, it hits newspapers. This is all in your library. If you go and look, you'll find this. Somewhere along the line, something like this occurred. And so then your county, the volunteer fire departments, decided to get together, perhaps with an ambulance company, and they decided that what they would do is they would bring in a 911 system so that any two-year-old could pick up the telephone in the middle of the night and call 911 for help. And it was most likely sold to you as costing the county nothing more than really a hamburger or a pair of tennis shoes. And so people got behind this idea, and you created a 911 board. It's actually the Chaffee County 911 Authority Board. And when that process happens, you start to enter into a very interesting relationship, because you're moving away from being a sovereign county, an autonomous area, and you're moving into the FEMA control grid. You're moving into the global community. And what Enhanced 911 will do when it comes in and is fully, when you become fully compliant right there in Salida and Chaffee County, what you're going to experience then is basically a mapping process will happen where you will be given 911 addresses. You may already have them. 911 addresses, and with every one of those addresses, those are associated either with a front door or a mailbox, and there's a three-dimensional coordinate geometry point that's assigned to that. And that's part of the track and trace, the control grid. And obviously, if you can Google Earth on your computer, you can Google your home. You type in your address, and it will zoom in. And if you could actually see the resolution on the camera, it would be focusing either on your front door or on your mailbox, wherever that 911 coordinate geometry point has been assigned. And so at that point, then, your property becomes premise, and your premise then becomes part of a database, and then other information can be assigned to and associated with that 911 address. From there, you bring in once you have that 911 system in place, once you have the towers, the cell towers, interlocked in your county. Right now you only have 5 wireless carriers, but when you become phase one compliant, you'll have sufficient wireless carriers and enough towers in your county so that basically, to bring in Agenda 21 briefly, you would be able to be tracked anywhere inside of the county with a GPS unit in your automobile, and if you have one of the more later model Chryslers and many of the other cars, they have these tracking chips in them already. And that idea, it was designed, or that drive was designed so that you could be taxed for every mile that you drive. Certainly you're being taxed for every mile that you drive now with the increase in the fuel prices. But the idea is not just to tax you for every mile, but to actually be able to track where you're going in all of those miles. It's like carrying a Garmin GPS unit when you go out hunting or when you're backpacking or skiing. So this process then starts, it's like a step by step by step by step as more of these elements come into place. Now, right after the 911 system, what came into your county, most likely, and you do have one of these, was the Chaffee County Hazard Mitigation Plan. Now, the Hazard Mitigation Plan is directly working with FEMA. FEMA used to be the civil defense, but it no longer is benign. It's kind of the shadow government. It's the hidden government. It lies behind all things in this country and in many places around the world. They're involved. It's interlocking GIS, GPS, Global Governance System. But for us, in the United States of America, FEMA is the implementer here. And all of this can be verified on the Internet just simply by going to FEMA. You can go to www.fema.org, and then you can click type into the search box Hazard Mitigation Plan, Hazard Mitigation Plans, and then you'll be able to come up with your Hazard Mitigation Plan. You can also go to any browser. I don't think Google is very good at it, but if you use WebFerret or Dogpile or Scroogle or some of the other browsers, Mozilla Firefox can sometimes get you there. You might be able to just type in Chaffee County Hazard Mitigation Plan, and voila, bingo, up it'll come and you can read it. Now, this whole system is rather oppressive, and this is at the point now, we're now at the point where I came into this line of research, because in the county that I was dwelling, I was being asked to do some response in regards to an up-and-coming hazard mitigation plan, and the idea that we would then have a comprehensive plan and a county planning commission, all of which I was opposed to. So it's a process. It's a learning process that we need to understand and that we can go through and that you can do right on the Internet. It took me about 20 minutes tonight, and I found all of the parts on all of the links that I need to know everything about your county, the 911 system, the hazard mitigation planning system, the county commission, the county planning commission, the zoning, and then the building codes. And these building codes alter our relationship with our property. And it goes back into the implementation of Agenda 21. And for those of you who may not know what Agenda 21 is, certainly if you've listened to Melody's broadcast for any length of time, you've had plenty of opportunities to be introduced to it. But if you don't know what it is, there's a freedomadvocates.org. That's another website, freedomadvocates.org. It's a website that I'm affiliated with. Many of my writings and talks are on there. But you can go to freedomadvocates.org and actually order a copy of Agenda 21. It's a book. I have one right here in my left hand right now. It's a big 8.5 by 11 publication. Comes right out of the United Nations. And if you would rather or would prefer, you can go right straight to the horse's mouth. You can type in unp.un.org. That's United Nations Publications.un.org.
William, I did go ahead to the library and did have them order that book.
Excellent. Okay. Excellent. So once you have that in your possession, or if the library would actually carry it, that would be probably the first library in America that did, Melody. That would be a great step. And by all means, you know, both you and Jim just jump in any place, because I am the original motor mouth, and you know, I can do this stuff for days, not just hours. In fact, I'll just take a break and see if there's any questions or comments.
You're doing just fine, because I'm, you know, this is all new stuff for me, and I can tell right now it's really pertinent stuff.
Want me to tell you what it's like in real life?
Well, why don't you go ahead and open that door a little bit, Jim, and let the audience know what it's like when you first experienced the International Property Maintenance Code in your life.
Well, I'll put it very simply. I have two acres of property in the nicest part of Charleston, West Virginia. And my father had a fire in the house. He died in that fire. And very unfortunately, there's no structural damage. The city would not issue me a building permit to even replace the windows in 1992. In 1996, I had to tear it down because of an eyesore. That's about a $200,000 loss. So this has been used by corrupt developers. And this piece of property has been under attack for quite a while. But the bottom line was about April of 2006, the building inspector, whom I had known since I'd been in high school, came by, and he discovered that there were 6 bags of grass clippings in our driveway, which Diane used for mulch. My lovely wife had a front yard, which 150 flowering species, people would pull off a busy road and take pictures of our front yard. It was not a dump. It was a 1916 farmhouse. And I also found a dented gutter on one of my garages. It was not dangerous. The garage is less than 10 years old. So at any rate, I found out that it meant 2 months in jail and or $1,100 of fines. During my arraignment, all were kicked out of the municipal courtroom except defendants, can we say secret tribunal, at this arraignment. I didn't even, my wife had to find out what IPMC with numbers followed it meant. We had no idea. I called the city of Charleston. What does it mean? Oh, it's a building code. And can I look at it? Oh, you have to buy a copy. Okay. Well, I found out what the penalties were. Then I went nuts for about 5 weeks. I contacted 200 local, regional, national, international, including BBC, news outlets. Help me out. I've known the editor of the local newspaper since we were on the same swim team. She wouldn't help me. Local talk radio shows, found out what it was all about, would not return my calls. For 5 weeks, I paced the floors, and I found out I hit a horrendous hard spot. Here's what it is. It is not a law which is passed by a legislative body and adopted by a chief executive of some sort, signed into law. It is a code that is adopted by a jurisdiction. And what that basically means is they basically buy the darn thing, fill in the blanks, and all of a sudden it's part of law. Now, William and I differ in that I'm 99% sure that it was never passed by the legislature in West Virginia. I know three of the representatives in West Virginia. Not one of them had even heard of it. I talked to people on city council. He hadn't heard of it. Okay? So it can, apparently it was adopted by administrative decree in New York State. It's in six states statewide. It's in God knows about 500 and some different towns and counties. But apparently it is not a law. It is a code.
Well, let me jump right in right there.
Go for it.
Because I'm holding the International Property Maintenance Code in my hand, all right, my left hand.
Go.
I'm really into the books, folks. I like to go to the horse's mouth. I like to have the real McCoy. And so what Jim is talking about here is this International Property Maintenance Code is one of a member. It's a member of the International Code family that were promulgated as prescriptive and model codes by the International Code Council, which, as I said, was headed by James Lee Witt, former director of FEMA. Now, in the very first, you open up here to the fourth page inside of this booklet. It's a booklet. It has less than 100 pages. It's only 31, 32 pages long. And on this page, it says at the top of the page, ordinance. And then, if you read down through it, what you see in two pages is a sample ordinance that any jurisdiction that desires, any local jurisdiction that desires, can simply have their secretary type this up, just copy it, and then you just fill in the blanks and make your various insertions at the points where they want you to insert. For instance, section 101.1, the name of the jurisdiction, then 103.5, the appropriate schedule, heights and inches, dates in two locations, the ordinance number, and so on. There's only about five or six places that they have to fill it in, and they fill in that, and then your county commissioners or your local city council, at a meeting, they go, Mr. Chairman, I move that that Salida adopt the International Property Maintenance Code as the property code for Salida. And then someone, Mr. Somebody so-and-so, says, I second that motion. And then the chairman says, is there any discussion? And then someone might say, well, here's the book, and I recommend that we, you know, amend the motion that we include this book so that this will be our code. And someone seconds that. And this is there any further discussion? And seeing none and sensing that you're ready to vote, all those in favor of adopting the International Property Maintenance Code as the property maintenance code for city of Salida in Chaffee County, Colorado, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, same sign, it passes. And that's all the more that it takes. Go ahead, Jim.
But the bottom line is nobody, quote, end quote, nobody knows what it is. I know that the House representative guys, none of them knew anything about it. But the bottom line, here's what it is. I'll boil it down real quick. The code official is basically the prosecutor or investigator, judge, jury, and executioner for this thing. Because whatever he says goes. Okay, he is the sole interpreter of the code. Violations. Anything the code official says is not in good working order. A cracked window pane, a sticky window, a sticky door. Anything he says is not in good working order every day. Separate violation, separate mandatory misdemeanor. Any jailable and or finable every day. Anything the code official says is an unsanitary condition. Examples, dog droppings, puddle, bags of grass clippings, which my wife used for mulch. Empty pop can on your property. Anything he says is non-sanitary condition. The judge has to rubber stamp whatever he says. As I said, it's a code, not a law. And the next one is anything the code official deems as a noxious weed. Define noxious weed. All right? Whatever he says, same day, every day, is a separate mandatory misdemeanor. Okay, not only that, but this gets really interesting. The code official can enter your property without a search warrant and inspect it. And not only that, but the code official can also prevent you from entering your property, your house, and he can tear it down at his discretion, leaving you with your possessions in it, leaving you with nothing but the mortgage, the fines, a lien placed against your property until the fines and demolition costs, whatever he charges, I presume, are paid. So you're making payments on a house in a landfill.
So you're, now, in other words, you're saying that if you're not even allowed to occupy the place, then you are, but you're still responsible for all expenses.
Yes, ma'am. One attorney looked at it. He says, well, it appears to me that the building inspector or the code official, excuse me, is the sole interpreter, is the new Gestapo. And I don't like words like that. That makes my stomach tight. But, yeah, he looked at it and says, my God. And I've got to figure it out. This is the second largest financial scam in U.S. history. That's what's shaping up to be. Can I put a bigger perspective on this?
Well, let me jump in right there and just read from the code for the benefit of the audience so that we understand that what you've just heard comes basically right out of this booklet and is as just about as true a statement as you can get. Section 101 or 104.1, it says this, general. The code official shall enforce the provisions of this code. The code is made law. Now, these are my words. The code is made law. The code official is the law enforcement officer. As with the conservation department agent or a forest service ranger, who were initially unarmed and believed to be friendly, they are now armed, generally feared, and considered likely to be hostile. May one expect that a code enforcement deputy shall one day holster a sidearm? So those are my comments. But in the beginning it says, the code official shall enforce the provisions of the code. Now, in section 104.2, he is also the rulemaking authority. The rulemaking authority grants the code official, quote, authority as necessary in the interest of public health, safety, and general welfare. Well, if you remember, then, public health and safety, that generally is your police department. But this is a police power or executive power. And then it continues in 104.2, to adopt and promulgate rules and procedures. This is legislative power. And in 104.2, it continues, to interpret and implement the provisions of this code to secure the intent thereof. This is judicial power. So in this one person who may or may not have any practical experience, any legal or technical training, could perhaps be just through patronage a friend of a friend, someone that was out of work, maybe they were returned recently from Iraq, a veteran, and needs a job. This person can be handed by your town, by your county. They can be handed all of the rulemaking authority or the executive power, the legislative power, and the judicial power. And this code official, this is section 104.3 through 104.7, the code official shall make all of the required inspections, shall accept inspections made by approved agencies or individuals, you see, so they can assign to others the inspection process. The code official is authorized to enter structures or premises at reasonable times to inspect. That's that violation of the warrant, subject to constitutional restrictions on unreasonable searches and seizures, if any yet exist under the Bush administration. The code official shall carry proper identification. That would be perhaps a badge and a gun. The code official shall issue all proper notices or orders to ensure compliance. That would be like the police officer's ticket book. So you can see then that with the powers granted to him, the opportunity and the likelihood of arbitrary and capricious enforcement of this code then becomes without question. The potential for graft, corruption, bribery, and the abuse of power inherent within a system without adequately defined oversight, checks, balances, or limitations is reason alone to reject the 2006 International Property Maintenance Code at first glance. But, as Jim brought up, there's also the fines. Jim?
Very simple. I call it the International Property Seizure Code. just that simple, because they can find anybody on their property. If you stop and think about it, in Charleston, West Virginia, it's $555 a day and or a month in jail for every day. Now, it
now
is,
wait a minute. That was $550 a day?
$555 per day per offense. In other words, every day is a separate offense, $555 per day.
Okay, let's clarify that. You had six bags of leaves. Let's say that you had a dented gutter and a cracked window pane and chipped or peeling paint on the front of your house. Would all three of those constitute a violation?
$1,500 a day and or 3 months in jail for every day of the violation.
Every day. It's accumulating.
Mm-hmm. Yes, every day is a mandatory misdemeanor.
My understanding is ours is $1,000, if I'm correct.
Wouldn't surprise me. I call it the International Property Seizure Code because you can seize any piece of property with this. It's kind of like the mainstream media says, eminent domain, eminent domain, eminent domain. It's a distraction. The real killer is the IPMC. And I refer to it as the International Property Seizure Code now at this point. After what I've been through and the flack I've gotten ever since I brought this to public attention, I won't bore you with the details. But it is definitely a situation. Let me put the larger perspective on this. I've had to read a lot of stuff about economics. My parents kind of put it in front of me and said, hey, here's the truth. Here, read Adam Smith, blah, 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 blah. Any rate, whenever these fiat banking systems go in, they seize control of the currency. They grab as much property as they can because their real goal is stealing resources and real estate. So they bleed as much as they can through the currency system. They don't need currency. They're looking for real estate and resources. And then when the banking system fails, that's when they start directly seizing property. Now, everybody's paying attention to eminent domain. This is 10 times worse than eminent domain. Under eminent domain, it costs them money to steal property. Under this, it's very, very financially rewarding to the jurisdiction.
So what essentially you're saying is that our economic system as it is today was not by accident.
Absolutely not by accident. It was by design. My parents filled me in about the Federal Reserve and such as that in 1965. So I've been watching this unfold. But the bottom line of it is extremely simple. It is property seizure. It's finding you out of it. Now, the first layer is, oh, this is to make property better. Yeah, sounds really good. The next seizure is it can be used by corrupt developers in collusion with the city officials. Okay? And I do believe that's what I experienced without saying anything. That's my opinion. And the next layer is that how is the government going to pay off all these debts, our federal government? The next layer in that I see from my historical, and I've read Caesar's Gallic Wars and all this stuff, just on and on and on and on, Machiavelli's Prince. What I see happening, and the more evil, is incrementally, over a period of time, it will be used to seize our property to pay off our debts. That's the one
I saw this one coming.
That's my opinion, okay? So you see, if we sell our property to a Chinese guy, let's say that I sell my property to a Chinese fellow. Okay, I get the money out of it. If our government seizes that property, because they place a lien on it, okay, if they seize the property, then they can sell it, because the Chinese are not looking for dollars. They know where they come from, okay? They're looking for real assets. So I see this on three layers. The initial, what it looks like on the surface, because all evil is done in the name of good, okay? That's the layer one. Layer two, I can see it being used by corrupt officials and developers. And level three is I can see it. You see, if you mortgage your house to pay for everything else, you can end up losing your house because you can't pay the mortgage, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is what I personally see, my opinion, the United States has done.
Right.
Okay, we have $21 trillion worth of residential real estate. Now, this works against, IPMC works against residential and business real estate. So you see, okay, now let's say that these international bankers, they've stolen everything they can steal. What's left that they haven't stolen? Ooh, all the money's locked up in private real estate. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my larger perspective of it. Now, Mr. Roberts, Will is definitely the authority on this silly thing. But from my having learned years of Latin and everything else in the world, I see this as part of the property seizure. I listen on my shortwave radios while this happened in Argentina. They'll, like whenever these things happen in other countries, they'll go after this, that, and the other, the fringes, but then they go after the plantations. They go after anything they haven't stolen yet.
And you know, yep. What's interesting on that is the ones that are the intermediaries in this, thinking that they're going to be free from all this, uh-huh. They're going to get caught up in it too.
Anytime you do business with the devil, And these people do know what they're doing. Okay, now I'm going to tell you, I'm the only person I know. Now, a full-blown attack, they go after you wave after wave after wave of fines, okay, to steal your property, all right? That's a full-blown attack. Now, I deflected it. I got my first two hits. I got the arraignment, and then I searched the media everywhere. I paced the floors for 5 weeks, okay? And then finally, by the grace of God, well, some guy called me in the middle of the night at my house, and Charles says, we ought to burn your blankety-blank house down with you in. And I says, okay, that's enough. I ain't going to die for nobody. But I left and went to my little log cabin in the woods, and I was listening to Derry Brownfield one day. They were talking about these restrictive housing developments. Leave your garage door up too long, what have you. You got a fine. I said, there ain't nothing. And I told them to check out the International Property Maintenance Code. They didn't believe me at first. I had to call them back and said, now listen, you're talking to one of the most educated people you're ever going to run into. I'm telling you the truth. Look into it. Derry called me back twice that evening. He couldn't find anybody who knew anything about it who would go on the air with him. He said, this thing's hot. The next day we did a show. Ed from Michigan calls in from St. Clair Shores, Michigan. He says, yeah, we put thousands and thousands of dollars into our property. They made me cut down my this, that, and the other. And after we did all that, they said my foundation was faulty. I'd have to remove it. I came home from work. My son was in the back of a cruiser with cuffs because he wouldn't leave the property. They wouldn't let us into the house. St. Clair Shores, Michigan, I'm sorry. and the next day they tore the house down. He owed $120,000 on it. I found that out later. But this is real. They're beta testing it now. But I think that's what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at brown shirts or something. I don't know what. Nazi youth or I have no idea what. To directly steal real estate and resources. Now, that's the bigger picture. And
let me take it now, Jim, to an even larger picture.
Please.
Because Chaffee County, is it Chaffee or Chaffee?
Chaffee.
Chaffee County also has a hazard mitigation plan that you've entered into. And in that, you have floodplain management. And if I'm looking correctly on the map here, you've got the Arkansas River flowing right through town. Ever had a flood in Salida?
It's been a while, I would imagine.
Okay, been a while. Is there a flood, according to FEMA, is an inundation? Is any 1% or greater chance of inundation on any day of the year. Now, if you have a depression in the backyard, let's say it's the size of a child's wading pool in diameter, and it holds water during a rain, maybe it's because you've got clay or something like that, that gland, that little spot there, that wet spot, is inundated. And so that could conceivably be considered a floodplain. It's part of the floodplain. And if you are within the floodplain, now, the United States Coast and Geodetic Survey and FEMA work in tandem to create flood panels, floodplain maps. And so a homework project for everyone listening in Salida would be to get the floodplain maps for along the Arkansas River there and any of the tributaries that come in anywhere inside of your watershed, and then also take note of whether you've recently had a remapping. They're in the process of remapping all over the United States. Wherever a hazard mitigation plan is passed, then they come along with an aerial resurvey. Of course, they have to have the 911 first, so we have it all on disc, so to speak, as opposed to on film, which is so old-fashioned. And so what we have then is a floodplain. Now, a floodplain, you're looking at the 100-year flood. So, obviously, Melody, you haven't been there for the last 100 years, and nobody that's listening tonight has probably been there for the last 100 years because, you know, by now, at this time of the evening, they would be in bed. But or they might be sitting there with a cup of tea and a cat and a shawl, and I don't know. But nevertheless, sometime in the last 100 years, there was a 100-year flood. And so that then becomes the floodplain or the flood basin. Now, inside of this process, the hazard mitigation plan, one of the objectives is to sell more flood insurance. Isn't it interesting? They actually will turn the county commissioners or your city floodplain administrator into an insurance agent to sell these insurance policies. And what they want to do is get 20% or more each year than they had the previous. And that's all written right into the hazard mitigation plan. And if you think I'm kidding, in my right hand I'm holding the hazard mitigation plan that was prepared for McDonald County, Missouri by the Harry S. Truman Coordinating Council.
So they build right in the so-called inflation factor in there in the program.
Yes, and if we think about it from the larger picture of the land takings, the takings of land, the idea is to get people. Well, actually, the whole intent of this is to eliminate or mitigate repetitive loss claims. Key phrase: repetitive loss claims. In other words, if someone has at some point in time filed a claim for flood insurance on their property, they then become a person of interest or property of interest, because what FEMA wants to do is eliminate repetitive loss claims. How will they do that? Well, through the use of the international building codes, they will be, and their code enforcement inspection personnel, they will make it such that you will have to bring your property up to certain standards, which only God could actually fulfill, you know. But they will ask you to bring your property up to certain standards,
or else
be moved off of that property. Now, what they want to do, Melody, is that they want to relocate us up and out and away from the floodplains, all of the fertile ground that runs along the water, getting us back away from the water so that we're dependent on other sources for water. And then they want to, through a process known as floodplain buyout, where your local authority will have to come up with 20% of the land value, FEMA will come up with 80% matching funds and actually buy people off of their farms along the river.
Ouch.
Yes.
Well, now here's the interesting thing. My house is something like, 700 feet above the river. So this is not for somebody just in a river valley.
No,
it can
not
be used on any piece of property.
Right, wait a minute. Hold on, Jim.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I don't want to confuse the audience.
Right.
The International Property Maintenance Code is a member of the family of the international codes.
Absolutely right.
Okay, so there's a whole body of codes that are used in this process. Now, one of the things that we've learned about sustainable development, if you want to reduce it down to one word, you can reduce it down to this word, demand. It's all based upon demand. We have all of these people like Jim who have a beautiful old home, 1916 farmhouse, in beautiful condition with all of this, you know, wonderful landscaping around. It's got all kinds of historic and romance and family love and tender care. Unfortunately, it's an old house. And it would be much better to move Jim into a sustainable community and get him out of his car and onto a bicycle or a rickshaw. It would be much better if he would not have any source of income so that he would depend on a rebate check from Uncle Thuck so that he could then be completely dependent for all of his resources from the mommy state.
Slavery.
So it's an idea of transforming. It's a wrenching transformation of our relationship with our property, and it goes global. And this is what Sustainable Development Agenda 21 really is.
Bingo.
So what are they doing? So ultimately, all these coastal areas are in jeopardy then.
Exceedingly.
And anything, like he's dealing with the FEMA hazard mitigation plan, all I'm saying is that if you go through and you read the International Property Maintenance Code, it can be used against anybody for anything. You can have raw acreage, and the code of interest says, oh, those are noxious weeds over there, oh, and steal the property. And the first plank of the Communist Manifesto, there will be no private property. This is simply property seizure. As I said, it's a second largest financial scam. It's shaping up to be the second largest financial scam in U.S. history, the first one being the 16th Amendment and everything that came along with it.
Well the reason why... Go ahead, Melody.
We're not the only place that's experiencing that, from my understanding that Australia is being hit by this pretty good.
Yep.
It's international.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It says in there that any jurisdiction anywhere in the world can adopt it. Now, I talked to one... When this happened, people around me were enraged. One lady says, oh, that's the prettiest house on that road. And, you know, but people were enraged. They raised a stink with the mayor all the way to Washington, D.C. My phone went nuts, 30, 40, 50 phone calls a day. It was just absolutely insane because people were enraged about this. But what I cannot seem to, well, that's because my property was eyeballed for development, I do believe. That's my opinion. But the bottom line is nobody is going to be able to get away from this. As I said, it's in six states statewide. West Virginia is one of them. New York's one of them. I can't remember the rest of them. Texas, I think, is one. But it is slowly being adopted. But the amazing thing is nobody, quote, unquote, nobody knows about it. But it is dead seriously. It is property seizure. And as I said, I know that there's residential real estate is $21 trillion. I don't know what commercial real estate's worth, but any piece of property can be taken with it whenever this code is adopted. And as I said, there are I knew three House representative members years ago. They asked me to run for House. But not one of them knew about it in West Virginia.
Well,
so it's that's how devious it is.
Let's tie this into Chapter 7 of Agenda 21. Chapter 7, and again, folks, I'm referring to a book. It's a book that you can acquire, and I recommend that you do. You really need to understand what Agenda 21, the Earth Summit, the United Nations Program of Action from Rio, Agenda 21, the Program of Action for Sustainable Development, signed in 1992, brought back to the United States by George Bush Sr.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Clinton had his help in all of this. And we basically have a Vision 2020 Council just about in every prominent area all around the United States. But going back to Agenda 21, in Chapter 7, it calls for the establishment of a culture of safety. That's quote-unquote culture of safety. It's a global safety cult.
Everybody but the government.
It guarantees neither safety nor does it permit liberty. And it's been raised from the ashes of the Cold War civil era civil defense program. But this cult has many names, of which sustainable development is but one. Now, let's look at this in a little bigger scale. We've been talking a little bit about floodplains. Jim is 700-some feet above sea level in a 1916 farmhouse. But this is what the scope really is. Listen to this. To reduce, through concerted international action, especially in developing countries, the loss of life, property damage, and social and economic destruction or disruption caused by natural disasters such as earthquakes, windstorms, tsunamis, floods, landslides, volcanic eruptions, wildfires, grasshopper and locust infestation,
right.
Drought, and desertification, and other calamities of natural origin. Now, this is only half of the story, because they talk about natural or man-made disasters. And so, it's so broad-sweeping. Let's say, Melody, that you decided, well, I'm going to build a sustainable house, and I'm going to locate it in Salida, and I'm going to follow the international codes. And so what I want to do is I want to build my house so that it can withstand earthquakes, windstorms, tsunamis, floods, landslides, volcanic eruptions, wildfires, grasshopper and locust infestations, drought, desertification, floods, of course, and or natural disaster, man-made disasters, or terrorist threats. What kind of a house would you build? What kind of a project would this be for your architect? Well, he would go to these international building codes. It would be like Frankenstein's monster trying to blend all of these things together. But if you have a house that could withstand an earthquake, it's not going to have the same structural design as a house that would be safe from flooding. It wouldn't have the same structural designs as it would for windstorms or tsunamis. All of these things bring in different factors. And so the architect is left with an impossible situation. He just simply can't deal with this. And so it's really better, Melody, for you to move off of that property and move into a sustainable community and let the experts design your life.
And the code official is a sole interpreter on all these international codes.
Absolutely.
You know, one of these things you mentioned that they use the GIS system. Now, my understanding is they're going to be using that GIS system to inspect your property as one means to inspect your property.
If you do Google Earth, and anybody out there that hasn't loaded it up on their computer and Googled their own house, you know, well, you're just behind the times, but nevertheless, you could do that. or if you don't have a computer and you're listening on the radio tonight, you could go to the school library, or you could go to the public library and go on Google Earth, just load it and run it, and you could look at your house. But what you will see is a very good photograph from elevation, but it's kind of fuzzy and granular. It has a filter running in it. If you were to go and look at Baghdad, you would see very little. It's even a stronger filter that's running there to block you to be able to see specific locations. If you Google the Pentagon, you will see a very blurry picture. But if you Google your own house, that will be clearer because you have security clearance to look at your own house, so to speak. But if you were to step out of that level and go into a government level, the filters, depending on your security clearance, the filters are, the picture becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. And at certain levels, I have read on the internet from these sites, government sources, that they can actually read the label on a golf ball laying in the grass from space. From space.
Wow.
And so it is very intrusive. It violates our right to be secure in our persons, our places, and our papers. There are so many new technologies that are coming with that can actually, you know, basically see through your house. It's just as bad as going to the on an airplane flight and having to pass through those scanners. So with the technologies that's coming in, now where is some of that other technology coming in? It's coming through grants and aid, through once the community establishes enhanced 911, then your first responders, your police, your county sheriffs, your fire departments and whatnot, they have these cameras now that you can get. If your state senator can get a couple of bags full of these toys and bring them back from some excursion and gift them to your local responders, your volunteer fire department, some of the things that they have around here, you can look through the walls of a house. You can see where somebody is in a burning house. Well, you can also look into a house when it's not burning. You could go and park in front of someone's house and look through the walls, and you can see whether they're showering, whether they're dressed, whether they're asleep, or whatever they are. So it's exceedingly intrusive in that way, and it abuses much of our liberty. But it's through this process. Now, you might look around right there in Salida, folks, and see if you've got some of these brand-new, great, big, shiny fire trucks. If you do, then you are receiving benefits for having participated in the establishment of this program. These fire trucks are being given to people all over the United States. These are being purchased at extremely high dollar amounts. And it's a way of paying back certain manufacturers for their participation in this program. It's along the same lines as the voting machine scam. Those voting systems are very expensive, but this is a way that the manufacturers get paid back by the Senate and by the congressmen and by your local officials. So all of these various and sundry toys, they all work together, and they all follow step by step by step this process, which begins so innocuously from a 9/11 system. Being able to call 911, 911, 911, 911. All you have to do is type in on your telephone 911. Well, once you get into that, that opens the door, and all of the rest of this stuff starts to come. Now, one of the worst aspects, the end game in all of this, and we saw that down in Katrina, was that there's a process that is used. Once your county has established an emergency operations plan, that's your county sheriff, and your first responders, your enhanced 911 authority. Part of the hazard mitigation planning process is they make sure that you have, as one of their criteria, an emergency operations plan. And then you need to have an emergency operations center. And so the next step in this is the establishment of a NIMS center. Now, you go on the Internet and type in NIMS, N-I-M-S. That's the acronym for the National Incident Management System. National Incident Management System. Now let's go back down to Katrina. So we have this great storm that comes in and ravages the area and passes out of the area, and then the Navy SEALs blow the dikes and then the city floods. The French Quarter, no, it wasn't the French Quarter, what was it, the Ninth Ward floods.
Ninth Ward.
And so then everyone is forced from their homes, including the people who were up on the high ground. Everyone's forced out of the city. The local police exhaust their ability to cope, even if they have to cut their own wires to their command system, which happened. They exhaust their ability. And so they make an appeal to the county, and the county sheriffs come in with their speedboats and whatever, and they zoom around and they go, oh, we can't handle this, it's too much. So they exhaust their capacity, and then they cry out to the state, and the state sends in the state patrol, and the state patrol wrings their handkerchiefs. They don't want to soil their hats, and they don't want to get their feet wet, so they stand on the bridges and shoot at people. And then they've exhausted their ability. And then so they call in the next step, which is the National Guard, and the National Guard comes in, and they exhaust their abilities. And so then they made a call all around the United States, and other National Guards and other state patrols and local first responders responded. And so that all that was exhausted. And still, we've only gone through a few days here now, and this is Katrina. You can get all of this off the internet from the news sources. And so then the state throws up its hands in for mercy, and then FEMA is to come in. Well, FEMA doesn't want to come in because FEMA is part of the process. And so what they did was they stalled and they stalled and they stalled. And so much of the materials and so much of the things that were donated, the water and the food and the trailers and all of the things, the clothing and the blankets and everything, was wound up in storage houses, which they finally gave away to charities. And those people never got it. And so FEMA throws its hands up, and George Bush then gives the okay, and they bring in the international military, the troops from Mexico and other foreign troops, the United Nations, Blue Helmets, come onto the United States. Now, this is a system. It's called the National Incident Management System.
Yep.
And it's the continuity of government, but it's also a chain. And so we need to know that Katrina was basically a laboratory experiment that now will continue to happen everywhere. It needs to happen all around the United States.
Tornadoes, whatever.
Tornadoes, floods, fires, civil unrest, riots in the streets. The Democratic National Convention, the Republican National Convention, anywhere and everywhere. The local authorities throw up their hands in defeat, and then it just walks right up the chain. Now, your local county emergency operations center will be taken over by FEMA. FEMA will come in, the NIMS system will come in, and they have great big white, like Winnebago motor homes with satellite dishes on the top and set up as command centers inside. They have advanced men that they'll send in to a quality, well-built E911 building with bulletproof windows and all of that.
William.
They take over the armories,
okay,
and they occupy all of that.
Okay, but William.
You got a break.
Yes, I do. This is KHENLP 106.9 Salida. And the views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And this is Truth Quest with Melody. And my guests tonight are William Roberts and Jim Lovell. And we're talking about the International Building Codes, but it kind of expands into a whole lot more. And then again, support for KHEN and TruthQuest is brought to you by Kevin Barnes, agent for Land Property Inc.'s Little River Ranch, offering beautiful land home packages with underground utilities and river access just 3 miles from historic downtown Salida. Find out more at ColoradoHomeProperties.com or call Kevin at 719-207-0858. And let me do one other thing here. We're having a membership drive, and we are inviting people to become members of KHEN, and also we're going to have a Halloween bash this Friday at 7 p.m. at Bongo Billy's, and so I'll get into that a little bit more later, but I thought I would go ahead and bring that up. But next, let's go back into the important subject we're talking about. Go ahead, William.
Okay. So basically, you know, dominating the floor like I always do. You know, my friends get so tired of me, you know. They love it when I find another group to be with for a while because they get a chance to discuss things amongst themselves, you know. But it's tough being in radio because I have to do this all the time. So I can talk to myself until my dog thinks I've gone insane, which maybe I have.
It's tough to know as much about this as possible as you do and not go on and on because it's unending. Like, I heard reports that FEMA actually would shut down local police, what have you, radio systems where Katrina hit. And I heard stories where county sheriffs were telling the deputies, you go out on the roads going into town and stop any federal guys and say you'll shoot to kill. Actually, you see, all power actually rests in the county level, okay? The sheriff is ultimately responsible for anything and everything on that level. Now, this is where the Get Vocal Local goes. Now, I'm going to kind of push this in a different kind of a direction here, and correct me if I'm incorrect in this. But I do believe that the main thing is that people need to get the word out. Now, the International Property Maintenance Code is not the same as a building code. A building code has specifications, so many inches drop for so many feet of run for a sewage pipe, for instance. But so many amps service, so much gauge wire, blah, blah. But the bottom line of the maintenance code is anything the code official says, period, end of statement. Now, this.
So are you saying that they're separate entities from each other?
There are different building codes. Now, Mr. Robert, Will knows more about the individual codes. There's all kinds of everything from fuel piping to electrical to...
Let me just run down the list, and then I'll fill up my coffee while you guys continue, okay?
Go for it.
All right, here's the list, folks. The International Building Code, the International Electrical Code, the International Energy Conservation Code, the International Existing Building Code, the International Fire Code, the International Fuel Gas Code, International Mechanical Code, the ICC Performance Code, International Plumbing Code, International Private Sewage Disposal Code, International Residential Code, the International Wildland Urban Interface Code, and the International Zoning Codes. I'm going to fill up my coffee when I come back. Maybe we could talk about the International Wildland Urban Interface Code, which is another very interesting one. I'll be right back.
Oh, yes.
And by all means.
I think he ran for the coffee pot. But what it boils down to is this. Here's public property. We pay for it, they control it. Here's private property. We pay for it, they control it. But essentially what it boils down to is the word has to get out on this. I was shocked by the stonewall I got when I tried to bring this story up to people. Media, about 200 media outlets, Boston Globe, I mean, across the country, back and forth. Nobody would bite on this. It's like there's this taboo about bringing it up. But it is worse than eminent domain. It is encroaching. Like, for instance, St. Clair Shores, Michigan, is where Ed from Michigan had his ordeal, which made the Derry Brownfield show, and I brought that up with Derry Brownfield. But you go to iccsafe.org, and you look at the list of adoptions. They don't even know where it's been adopted, okay? And there was even a solicit, hey, if you know some place which has adopted this code, tell us about it. They don't even know where it's in place. So just because it's not on the iccsafe.org webpage, and you can click on a little map that says adoptions, just because it's not there does not mean anything, because St. Clair Shores, Michigan, is not on that list. And also, there's another devious thing about this. As people are getting a little bit irritated about this, to put it mildly, they're renaming it. You see, the code can be amended by any jurisdiction any way they want. So they can adopt this code and amend it, and you won't even know what it is if you get the plain vanilla 2000, 2003, 2006 version of it. And if I remember correctly, the 2006 version allows the individual, the code official, to come in and inspect your property for anything dangerous. I'll just paraphrase it. According to the ACLU attorney, an ACLU attorney tracked me down from an adjoining state. He heard this story. I don't know how he found out about me. And he basically said, listen, there's no way you can beat this thing. If you bump it up to circuit court, they'll just keep tacking on offenses. You have to take every single offense up to circuit court. It's $5,000 per case, roughly, in your county. It's a quagmire. There's no way to get out of it. But if you dig into it, I think the 2006 version says that he can seize anything dangerous. This strikes me as being firearm seizure. This is so deceitful because it's been on the books since 2000. I think the International Code Council came about in 94 or something. But if you dig into it, you'll see the 2000 version. You can download the 2003 version. You can buy the silly thing. It doesn't cost very much. But if you read the thing carefully, you will see that if you, put it this way, once this thing goes into place where you are, you no longer own your property.
Yes, the whole relationship changes completely. And you're right when you say that you cannot count on finding it necessarily by this particular title. Municipal codes can be passed as an ordinance that are exactly the same. They're using the same stuff. All of this has been, all of this basically, it's a model code. Now, the Uniform Commercial Code began with the Uniform Law Commission as a model code. And so what the, now we're going to change the topic briefly. The Uniform Law Commission came into existence. It was first there was the American Bankers Association, then the American Bar Association, and shortly after that, they created, those two, created the Uniform Law Commission. And the primary purpose of the Uniform Law Commission was to circumvent constitutional law by creating model codes that may or may not be constitutional. But they would, if they were brought in from a federal level, they would require a constitutional amendment. So the federal government can't mandate something out across all of the states. And so what the Uniform Law Commission does is it writes model codes and model acts. And then, through the legislative bill drafting agency that is located in all of the several states, in the legislature, in the House of Representatives, as the Senate committee, it's a committee bill drafting agency. It's also the research group of your state. And this is statutory, created by state law. This organization then drafts model legislation that mirrors or parallels the legislation that came from the Uniform Law Commission, and then they pass them. Now, the property maintenance codes, the international codes, work exactly the same. They are a model code, it's prescriptive, and so when these things are introduced into, let's say, Seattle, San Francisco, Salida, Barry County, McDonald County, anywhere in the United States, you know, you just turn around and wave your wand. But when they're introduced, they can be known by any name. I mean, this goes back to the Illuminati. The Illuminatus, the Illumined Ones, never wanted to be known by the same name twice. And so they would work and follow the same things, but they always had a different name. And the codes can go the same way.
If I may make a suggestion here, I strongly suggest that your listeners in Salida listen to us when we say, get a copy of it. You can download the 2003 version PDF format for free, if I remember correctly, unless they've removed it. Get it and read it. And then why don't you go, let's say that you're reworking, let's say your steps or a railing or something, go up to your folks and say, I'd like to see what the code book says about driveway maintenance or steps maintenance or something like that. And if you have read this monstrosity, you will recognize the language instantly. But I strongly suggest, now, this is a lot more important than watching a football game or whatever on TV. Get a hold of the thing, read it. And I will tell you this much. I have several ideas on how you deal with these criminals because they know what they're doing. Believe me. But I have several suggestions about that. The main thing is get your eyes on this thing, read it, understand the language, so that when you see the maintenance code, you will recognize it. And then you will find out that the monster is where you are, no matter where you are, because it can be passed as the city of XYZ, what have you.
Well,
so,
here, we can put some time into this, too, Melody.
Please.
Jim.
Okay.
Because this thing came in originally, I think it was in 1996. The 1998 edition of the International Property Maintenance Code superseded earlier property maintenance codes, but we can look at about 1996. So every county commissioner, the ones in the counties that I've studied, they're reelected every 2 years. So you've got 96, 98, 2000, 2002, 2004, 2006, 2008, and soon it'll be 2010. Now, the new commissioners coming in will have not necessarily any knowledge of how this code came into existence. They're just doing what the other guy did.
Right.
And so we might have somebody who, now we have a code officer, a code enforcement officer, and no one can get rid of them. if you read this book, you'll see that, that they're like a Supreme Court justice.
Almost can't fire them.
Yeah, you can't fire them. They're there on, as long as they're on good behavior, and they're always on good behavior because they make so much money for the community, no one's going to argue with them, and then they build an institution around themselves. They always need more money. They have a way of gaining money, and so they're just constantly writing more and more violations. They're good. They're good for the courts. They're good for the community. They're just as sweet, you know, as apple pie. The idea, though, is that when we say that the people who may be sitting today as county commissioners in Chaffee County may be new and not understand what we're talking about. So it is vitally important to get a copy of the booklet, and then when you take it in and ask them, is this the code that we're using?
Right.
You know, and just show them the book, and you're holding it. And they might say, let me see that. They may have never seen it, you see. And so if they can, then they'll have to admit that that is, yes, that's what we're using.
And if I may interject this, now when paperwork goes out in Charleston, West Virginia, it says MC with numbers after it. And supposedly, I haven't verified this, and I like to verify strong points, but supposedly if you call down to the city, they say, oh, well, it's the maintenance code, as if you're supposed to know what it is. But if you read the silly thing, you will understand it. And the corruption potential is astounding. It has been, according to an ACLU attorney who got hold of me, God bless him, he was willing to go to court with me at his expense and just for moral support, that he said to me very simply, he said, this thing is set up so there's nobody can possibly escape it. And also it has been used by one business in collusion with city officials to drive out another business. It has been used by one neighbor to drive out another neighbor so he could have a bigger yard. When you have a totally unbridled power, the potential for corruption goes in every direction. But if you don't know what it is, you won't recognize it. But my suggestion is find out if it's in your area, whether it's on the ICCSafe.org website or not. And the only way you'll figure it out is if you read it for yourself. It takes about a half hour, 45 minutes roughly, something like that to read, I'm guessing, because the last half is just references to court cases, what have you. But if you sit down there and read the silly thing, then you will recognize it. And then the word trick is to get the word out. Now, you can try going to your local mainstream media, but I'm going to explain something to you, which I learned in 1969, because I wanted a career in journalism until one day I found out a few things. I decided this is not what I want. And now this is my opinion. Is all it is. But you see, if you're a really good, astute, wealthy criminal, you have to pay off, the prosecuting attorney, the police, the judge. Oh, yeah, the popular media, so they won't cover the story. But unfortunately, this has happened even with the town criers of 1,000, 2,000 years ago. Whoever got paid the most got their word out. So you probably won't get much support from your public media. And that's the situation where you're going to have to get local. And this means email lists. That means getting something printed up on your own computer with names. The trick is, you see, our government started out as a watchdog for the sheep, okay? And then they turned into slowly into wolves. They morphed into wolves with they're wearing their watchdog clothing, of course. So the trick is to rip the watchdog clothes costume off of the wolves. And the only way you can do that is exposure. Now, I'm a pacifist. I consider it my duty to inform people, look, if you do this out of the other, it's going to really lead to trouble. But what I'm going to try to say is understand these people do know what they're doing. They know it. They've read it. And if I were you, I would find out if it's in your area. Now, we know it's in your particular town, okay? But there are people all across this nation who may not know this. But you're going to have to find out what it is, and then you're going to have to spread the word, print some up on your computer, names. Don't put the leaflets in mailboxes. That's illegal. But do whatever you need to do to get the word out, because the only thing... you can scare a lot of honest people with lies, okay? But you can always scare a criminal with the truth. So the main thing is to get the truth out about this thing. Learn about it. Find out about it. Because, as I said, if this is in your area, guess what? You just lost your house. You lost control of your house.
Okay, now look at this one scenario here, and this is what I foresee happening. Okay, so we've got a country that is going into receivership. Per se. Okay, so now we have taxing districts and all these other things that can raise revenue, and this code certainly sounds like it can raise all kinds of revenue. So we have an entity, a third-party entity out there that decides they want to purchase that the ability to collect these fines. Okay, so then this particular entity may not even be located in this country, let alone anywhere near, so that you have any kind of person to talk to about. Does that sound like anything you would foresee?
Well,
The reason why I say that is kind of like, to me, I draw that analogy to what's going on in Texas with the Trans-Texas Corridor, where they sold off a public commons as freeways to a Spanish corporation.
Well, I'm going to look at it from the point of view of macroeconomics. Our national debt, which they'll admit to, is like $10 or $11 trillion. Where are they going to get the money? Okay, what have they not stolen yet? The left blames Wall Street and the right blames Washington. And the truth of the matter is the same people own both of them. But what have they not stolen yet? How are they going to pay off the debt? How are we going to pay off our debt to the Chinese, for instance?
Well, let me answer the question that was posed, if I can, please.
Please.
Because we can always go back to this code. That's one of the values of having it. But again, section 104.3, where the code official shall make all of the required inspections or shall accept inspections made by approved agencies or individuals and keep written reports. So, Melody, one possible scenario, to use your question, would be that you could use a private contractor to make these inspections. In other words, let's say that you had a small town, and so you would hire someone, let's say Halliburton, for instance, that has a large infrastructure and can handle payroll and deductions and all of the accounting and retirement programs, and they could send into your community a Halliburton International Property Maintenance Code inspector, per se. Now, this is imaginary, but I'm just using a company that is a known international a contractor. Now, I noticed on the International Code Council's website this afternoon, early this evening, before the broadcast, that Abu Dhabi has just adopted the International Code Council's family of codes. Now, for the listeners that are not familiar with Abu Dhabi is part of the United Arab Emirates. We've all heard of Dubai and Dubai Ports International. But Abu Dhabi and London are linked at the hips financially. And so we can see the magnitude and the scope. But certainly, if you were working for Halliburton in Iraq and you wanted to have a weekend without mortars, rockets, and other things going on around you, you could just take a quick boat ride down to Abu Dhabi. And what is the purpose of the international codes in this level? If a developer was doing high-end work, and his clientele had properties in many places, the clientele might specify the international codes for their property holdings worldwide. In that way, when Prince Charming arrives at his Abu Dhabi resort hotel, when he comes in, he will reach for the light switch in the customary place, and it will be there. When he goes into the bathroom, all of the fixtures will be in the same layout that he's used to having in Paris or in Berlin or in New York. Everything in the building will function, the elevators, everything will work just exactly the same because it's all being built utilizing the same code structure. So everything is the same. It's homogenization. It's the destruction of individuality. And in a very real sense, it's the destruction of private property, because private property, I'm associated with the Ozarks Property Rights Congress, and we're very much aware of what private property really is all about. But private property begins with our thoughts and our ideas, our fundamental, our most basic fundamental God-given right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or life, liberty, and property, as the Declaration of Independence begins. That very first, most fundamental property that we possess is our mind, and it is from our mind that all of the actions that we take in our life then create the physical and the tangible property and the intellectual property that we develop. So when Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, and in the first plank proposed the abolition of all private property. He's reaching far beyond our house. He's reaching right into the mind of man, and he's seizing the control of that. And much of what the International Property Maintenance Codes and the international codes in general are doing is making that kind of a reach. Now, I said I wanted to go into this International Wild Land Urban Interface Code.
Please.
It's a very interesting little code, because what it does is it sets up a zoning system on your private property. It zones your yard. It zones your farm. It zones your acreage. It zones it beginning at your house in rings, distances out away from your house, things you can and cannot do, plants you can and cannot have.
Yes.
If you have a deck, you cannot have a cedar tree right beside it. If you have this, you must have that. If you have this, you can't have that. And it dictates how you actually take care of your yard, and it dictates how you interface with the wild land around you. And it matters nothing at all as to how great a property you have. If you have a 1,000-acre estate, this code applies all the way to the extent of your property.
Yes.
If you have a 50-by-50 lot, it covers your whole lot just the same way. So it's completely generic, it's completely intrusive, and what it really does is it creates a new interface for the municipality, for the county. It creates this new landlord. You've got a new neighbor, and he's the International Property Code or the International Code of Enforcement official. He's now your new landlord, even though you falsely believe you own your property.
And if I can toss this in, let's look at the concept of ownership. Some of the ideas behind ownership is you have control, power, and privilege over this piece of property. You also have responsibility, liability, and accountability. These codes very simply take control, power, and privilege of your property whilst leaving you with responsibility, liability, and accountability. Now, that's exactly what a thief does. So this is pure, raw property theft.
Exactly.
Will, Melody?
And it sounds to me like we kind of invited him in, too.
Well, I'm going to mention this much. So many times, this is the thing which has amazed me. I have brought this issue up with the Paragon Foundation, G.B. Oliver. He didn't pick it up and run with it. I listened to a program on Joyce and Dave Don Kleist, The Power Hour, and they had somebody from IJ.org, I think, dealing with him in a domain. I called them and says, have you heard of the International Property Maintenance Code? They just kind of shut me down and blew me away. I have raised it with Alex Jones. I have raised it everywhere I can raise it. And I have caught a tremendous amount of flack over this. Believe me. I won't even bore you with the details. But the governor of West Virginia, this was Derry Brownfield's show, was out of Missouri, went over WWCR. Within 3 hours of that show, somehow or another, the governor of West Virginia tracked down a friend of mine, a young man who kind of semi-sort of adopted me to help him along through learning this, that, and the other. And he contacted this young man I'd been in email contact with the message, how soon can you get out? Within 3 hours. That's Jim from West Virginia, 6 bags of grass clippings and a dented gutter. How did he find this out? This is one very hot topic. Now, when you start drawing flack, you know you're over the target. But ownership implies that you have control, power, privilege over this. And you have responsibility, liability, accountability for this. This is pure, raw theft, beyond which I can't. So many times, you see, whenever there have been totalitarian takeovers, the government will go after the fringes, and then the real goal is the money. Okay, Hitler was fascinated with the Jews because of their money and the factory owners. So they start with, oh, we'll work on this piece of property right here. Oh, there are coke dealers or drug dealers in here. So, oh, we can't fix that. Oh, we'll just have to wipe out the house and leave the landlord with a mortgage payment. And they go after it always. All evil is done in the name of good. But if you look at this thing, now it's legalese, and I am not a legalese person, but if you look at this silly thing and you suddenly realize, oh, my God, they just took control, power, and privilege, leaving me nothing with the bills. Like these, I don't know how many times I talked to Derry Brownfield. He said that show which I did where Ed from Michigan called in about what happened to him, son in handcuffs, tore his house down, etc. Derry said this show brought more reaction than anything I've done in the last 20 years, primarily because of Ed from Michigan. It wasn't me. Believe me, I didn't have any idea how deep this thing was at that time. But the bottom line is nobody is touching this.
Well, you're even saying that some of the largest people in the alternative media aren't even touching it then.
They're not picking up on it. They're not running with it.
They're aware, though. I do know that.
Yeah, there is a problem, you know, in this sort of stuff, that, as you can see in the way that we've been laying this out, you really do have to have some understanding here. I mean, it's not just something that you can just get a copy of the book. Sure, you could get a copy of the book, but tying it into the bigger picture, it takes a little bit of understanding. And so some, perhaps, of the hosts would shy away from it in a way that maybe would be the same as chemtrails. You know, some people want to talk about them, some people don't. If you don't understand how the process works, or you don't see the bigger picture of why that would even be something that would be an issue, or with the broadcast you had last week with Nikki Rapana, it's easy to say communitarian law and then just let your eyes glaze over and go back to sleep.
This is huge.
But this is a very large issue. Let's look at a couple more things, too. One of the, in the farming area, and I'm down here in southwest Missouri, this is cattleman land, hay raisers, grazers, and small towns. But one of the principles here, 302.8, it says, no inoperative or unlicensed motor vehicle shall be parked, kept, or stored on any premises, key word, by the way,
and no
vehicle shall at any time be in a state of major disassembly, disrepair, or in the process of being stripped or dismantled. Painting of vehicles is prohibited unless conducted in an approved spray booth. End of section 302.8. Now,
yep.
And no inoperative or unlicensed motor vehicle shall be parked, kept, or stored. Now, we in this area, a lot of us, have maybe two or three pickup trucks, often of the same kind. You might go to a farm auction. Let's say you're driving a Dodge Power Wagon with a Cummins turbo diesel engine in it, and you use this to feed cattle and run stock, and you're all over the field all the time, and every time you turn around, you've run over a darn rock, or here comes another log on in the grass, or you go across a creek on a regular basis, and your hub's all rust up. And so you're at an auction, and somebody's got the same kind of truck that you have, but it has a blown motor, and so you just pick it up for a couple $100 to it home.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you've got two or three of those. Well, then you get the motor on the good one goes, and so you stick yours over there, and then you find another truck, but it's not quite the same year. Well, you still got the other four trucks. Or maybe you've got this going with tractors. Or maybe you've got it going with hay binds or anything. So what this basically does is it gives someone else a power to tell you what you can and cannot possess and what you can or cannot keep and store on your own property. Now, we do come into the question of ownership. We never paid for anything. We're using the fiat dollars. We are using the Federal Reserve System, funny money system. So technically, we don't really owe anything because we've never really bought anything. So technically, they really do have a say over everything because they own everything. And they just all we've been doing is handing around trade chits for these things. We've been handing around promissory notes.
Poker chips.
Yeah, but just take that out of the argument and just simply go back and say, what do you mean? That no inoperative or unlicensed. What if I were to go out and buy, for instance, at an auction or out of the newspaper, a 57 Chevrolet Cabriolet convertible? And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to buy that. I can get it for a couple $100, and then I'll work on it in my spare time, and I'm going to restore this old car. Well, it might take years before you ever come around to actually being able to push it into the garage and put the motor in it that you finally found and had it rebuilt and get it painted and put an interior in it and then finally take it down and license it. But under this system, forget about it. The code enforcement official can drive by and see your 52 five-window pickup, Chevrolet pickup in the backyard and come in and put a placard on it, placard the house, and then walk around in your yard without ever knocking at the door and find as many violations as they can. And, of course, as Jim has stated, every one of those violations is a misdemeanor with a fine, and it's a misdemeanor and a fine accruing, adding every single day.
Okay. And jail time.
Okay, now to take this another step further, doesn't the HOAs, your homeowner associations and condominium associations already exercise a lot of this?
They're limited.
Okay.
They're limited insofar as you can get away from it by moving out of the place. this thing is imposed upon you. You do not have any, there's nothing voluntary about this. And most of the time has passed and, quote, nobody, end quote, knows about it. There's one fellow who went to all the city council meetings in Charleston, and he said he had never heard of it. And I won't bother to indict anymore, but all I'm saying is this thing, it's like there's a conspiracy of silence about the thing. I brought it up with local radio talk show hosts. They were very interested. They looked into it, and they would not return my phone calls. Now, who is pulling the strings?
Well.
Okay.
Okay, now, you brought up a little bit earlier about the Argentina and when it was taken over. I mean, there's so many of these property rights things and that kind of tie into what took place down there. Am I correct? Or?
Yes, it's like the illumined ones use anything and everything. They'll same thing, different name. But yeah, I watched the whole process, and I've been a shortwave listener all my life since 10, and I'm 57. But for whatever reasons, I have listened to this stuff go on all over the globe, all over the world. And I've read about it, I've listened to missionaries talk about different things happening in different countries, but this kind of garbage has occurred with the fiat money system, first draining the economy, destroying the middle class, stealing all, the deal is resources and real estate, just totally wiping out places. Food riots, their answer to food riots is to kill the rioters, but I have watched this on a worldwide scale from the time I was a little kid. I've listened to missionaries seriously talk in closed sessions. Missionaries can have a lot to say, but they won't say much in public because they don't want to endanger other missionaries. But I've listened to this stuff go on all over the world, and we are on the block right now. They're beta testing this IPMC right now. And if you go to and find out how many places it's enforced now, or adopted, I'm sorry, it's been adopted. It's growing exponentially. I think there were two towns in Ohio 2 years ago when I got hit, now it's like 50. So this is, now the only way we can stop this, you see, if you have a criminal and you surround him with 50 people who point their finger at the criminal and say, listen, I see you, I see what you're doing, then you can bring the criminal down without a single shot being fired. My greatest fear is this tyranny is going to go, tyranny always breeds vigilantism. I'm a pacifist, once again. I'm the watchman on the tower. That doesn't mean that I'm an invading army. And every time I say this, somebody says, oh, you're Bubba, you're going to start shooting. No. I'm the exact opposite. But what I'm trying to say is that if we don't confront it now, in numbers, in mass, passively, it's going to turn bloody. And that is my nightmare. And I fought tears so many times when I think about this as ridiculous. But if we can surround the criminal and point our finger at the criminal and say, we know who you are, we know what you're doing, you can't get away with it, you won't get away with it, well, then maybe, with God's help, we can resolve these things peacefully.
Well, one of the things is, and that's where trying to, in the research that I've been trying to do, is trying to look at the bigger picture on this, and because we've got an elite that's institutionalized this sort of thing. And ultimately, if we don't understand where they're coming from and what's going on, then we don't, like you said, we don't know how to head it off. And it isn't just, like you said, in here.
You know, my biggest problem with this whole thing, when I brought to people's attention, about a third of the people, and I was shocked at this, their response was probably false bravado. By golly, I'd load lock and cock. And whoa. And about a third of the folks who I talked to just didn't believe it. They thought I was crazy. Of course, everybody thinks that a little bit, I think. But at any rate, and a third of the people just kind of walked away like, I don't know what to think about this. But the thing which amazes people is they can't believe something this atrocious actually exists, but they can read it with their own eyeballs. But this is the astounding thing, is that this is so off the chart for people. Most folks cannot imagine that Nero burned Rome and enjoyed the daylights out of it because he was going to blame the Christians for it. People cannot imagine evil of this level, particularly amongst those who have so much money. I'm under the impression that the owners of the Federal Reserve control between $100 and $300 trillion worth of assets. Now, what do they want? They want your house, too. They want your kids. They want everything. But most people cannot imagine evil of this level.
Well, let's jump in. Let me jump in one more time here, because there's another aspect. You know, when you're thinking about the bigger picture, you know, Melody, this is another aspect that we really do need to be aware of, and that is that property taxes finance the schools largely, and roads, and things like that. And so there is an incentive to tax property. Now, I don't know, I didn't look and see whether or not you're a private property state or whether you just have real property taxes, but property taxes are based upon a percentage of the assessed value. An assessment is not an appraisal, it's an assessment, it's somebody's opinion. And an appraisal is a professional opinion, but the appraiser has to stand behind his opinion. With the an assessed valuation, you can arrange for a meeting and go in and discuss and negotiate the assessed valuation. But the assessed valuation is basically a street appeal and a land use issue. And so there is a definite benefit to keep your assessed valuations as high as possible. So many other grants and aid, so many other government paychecks, so many other corporate welfare schemes are built upon the total assessed value of a county. There are many different strings that are out there. And so it is to the county assessor and the county collector and the county commissioners, it is to their benefit to make the entire county's value or your city's value, your assessed value, as high as possible. Now, knowing that we're going to go into a time of extreme economic upheaval, it is to the advantage of the agencies, knowing that the people, when they have to make a decision at $5 a gallon gasoline, or whether they're going to buy gasoline for their lawnmower, or whether they're going to buy gasoline to go to work, knowing that people are going to be taking two jobs, or three jobs, or flat out of work, this concept of bringing in the sugar daddy, the big daddy, the new landlord, and getting you to spend money that you would ordinarily not support. You wouldn't necessarily go to the big box store and buy paint to paint the outside of your house. You might not go to the glass shop and get new glazing. You might just say, well, we'll just put off putting a new bathroom fixture in until we can afford it. But this system, again, if you understand sustainable development as I do, it's all based on demand. In order to keep the system going, there has to be incentive for people to go to extraordinary measures with their properties. The idea of if I don't want to make my place look like a show place and I'm really not harming my neighbors, then it's my concern. If I don't care whether my grass is 2 inches tall or 6 inches tall or 8 inches tall, if I have a bad back or a sorry knee and I don't feel like mowing, if I have a bad heart and I don't mow on hot days, I really don't care whether the bushes grow up wild looking or whether they're manicured, you know, everybody has a different, it's a subjective thing. It's not objective, it's subjective.
Soul interpreter.
Yes, the soul interpreter. So that's that code enforcement official again. So it's in their opinion whether your property is properly maintained or not, you see. So now what can we do? Well, there's a woman, Wanda, who lives in a county here in Missouri. I won't be too specific. Well, I guess I'll be a little specific. I've got a copy here. This is the Salem News. So Salem is a small town similar to Salida, and it's in Dent County, Missouri, about the same size as a Chaffee. And on the front page here, this is the front page, on Thursday, October the 5th, 2006, of the Salem News, that's a front page banner headline, "Some don't buy into the FEMA plan, another meeting set for Monday." And here, on the front page of this newspaper, is a picture of me holding up Agenda 21, the book, behind a podium in my nice shirt and tie with a good haircut, addressing a crowd of hundreds, a 200-page draft hazard mitigation plan to help Salem and Dent County deal with future natural or man-made disasters was the focus of an informational meeting Tuesday evening at Salem City Hall. An estimated 250 to 300 people turned out to hear Will Roberts, a researcher experienced in engineering and architecture and well-versed in FEMA codes, discuss the effects of the plan if it is adopted in Salem and Dent County. Now, I won't read the entire article, but in the next newspaper, Here's the headline. This was on Thursday, October the 12th. We're talking 7 days later. Banner headline, front page, the Salem News. County says no to local FEMA plan. You see, when we become vocal local, and when you have people who have the understanding that it is exceedingly difficult indeed to fight City Hall by yourself, but this woman and her group of property rights advocates put together over 300 people in a room, including the county commissioners and the city people, and brought in the FEMA people, and they all had the opportunity to speak truth to power. And in that one time, that one night, and then the following day when they brought almost 200 down to the county courthouse, the county saw God, and they backed off. And these are the things that we can do.
Now, something else, too. The wealthy people in this world tend to think of their wealth as giving them some security and insulation. And what little wealth I had, I felt I was fairly secure. That land had been in my family since the 30s, as in the 1830s. It was paid for, etc. And I just simply could not imagine something like this happening to me. And so many times people who have wonderful, nice homes feel somewhat smug in them that this won't go for them. This won't happen to me. But understand, this is the International Property Seizure Code. That's what it is. Now, all lies are found in labels. I can call anything that I want, whatever thing I want, but whatever it is, it is. But whatever what this is pure, raw seizure. And if people can see it, then they will do something about it. And the trick is, as I said, I'm a pacifist. And the trick is to confront this as soon as you can, now, and let your county officials know that they are legally liable and responsible for whatever happens in that county, no matter what alphabet agency walks in and baits them. But if we do not, put it this way, if your neighbor's getting attacked, some of my neighbors thought that, he must have done something wrong. I'm sorry, I'm the neighborhood good guy. You know, if somebody's lawnmower didn't work, I help them get that going. If it's slick and snowy and they can't make it up the hill, I have parking my driveway, don't worry. But parking be hard, I don't care. But I was a neighborhood good guy. But what I'm trying to say is if you have wealth, you are a target for thieves. This is the nature of thieves. So just if this doesn't wake up the, quote, yuppies, end quote, and I guess I were one, but if this doesn't wake people up to what's going on, I don't know what will. So the only thing I'm saying is learn about this thing and find out how atrocious it is. A lot of people have seen this silly thing, and they have heard the tape of the show, which I did, Ed from Michigan, coming on, telling his story. And they say, well, there's more to that story. They just can't believe something this evil exists. But, folks, it's in your face. Yeah, put it this way. If Satan was staring you in the face, would he look much different?
You know what I find kind of interesting? This code didn't just happen yesterday. This stuff has been in the works for quite a while.
Will knows about it.
And what I find interesting is a lot of these a lot of the building has been done within the last 15, 20 years, and done in places where it would be easy to come in and enact these codes, statutes, whatever they are, and take this property that somebody else went out and built and take it over.
Well, here's the thing which most upsets me, okay, about this whole overall issue is the lack of public awareness of it. Yes, they just kind of slick it in the side door. But the thing is you ask the next 100 people you run into, have you ever heard of the International Property Maintenance Code? Find out how many of them have. But this has been around for, I guess, half a decade in West Virginia. And the only thing I know is the ex-mayor of the city talked to me. I've known him since I was 8. He said, well, he hadn't read the whole thing, and apparently got passed by the state. It wasn't passed. It was adopted. And but you see, what it boils down to is this is actually going on, and we... Here in West Virginia, we can't believe that Billy Joe Jim Bob would burn us like this because, well, his grandfather was a fine fellow and his uncle was the undertaker my representative wouldn't do this, but no, look into this and you will be shocked.
Well, it wasn't the representative. There's a state option. I started out today, the broadcast, referring to DOLA, the Colorado Division of Emergency Management.
Yep.
There is a statewide adoption that comes in, but it's generally local option. The whole system runs on voluntary compliance.
Yes.
Now, when the International Property Code and you cross horns, dear listeners, it need not necessarily go to the extreme. What they, I believe in most cases they really hope that you will do will be to take those necessary actions to avoid multiple fines and make those repairs so that you keep your property value up. Instead of letting your property value come down, which really hurts the county or the municipality, they want you to keep your property values high.
That's the first layer.
They want you to stay busy making your place pretty. That helps to sell other houses in your neighborhood. It helps developers, et cetera.
Yep.
So there's two layers, many, many layers, but there's two ways of looking at this. One is that the average person will, let's say that he's gone. He and his wife are gone and his sons are gone, and they've gone deer hunting. And on Monday, they left on Sunday afternoon, and on Monday, the code enforcement guy comes by and he placards the house with some kind of a broken window pane or something. By the time they get back, they've been away for 5 days. They get back on Saturday, and they have got 5 days fines up here.
Yep.
So he hustles down with his thing. He pays off his fines. He and the boys get busy, and they fix the window glass and all of that, and he's out hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But at least he saved the day. He's the hero in the family, and everything is fine.
Go along to get along.
Go along to get along. And so perhaps 90% of the people will respond in that way.
Yes.
But there will be 10% of the people who just flat out don't have the money, don't have the ability, don't have the time, don't have the health, or whatever, or they're mad, or they get upset, or they don't understand the process, and they try and resist it, and they resist, and they resist for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, and they wind up getting $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 in fine, then they get thrown in jail, and then they lose the house or the farm. So there's different parts and pieces, but yes, we need to understand that there is a lot of history behind this. It goes back to the United Nations, a General mm-hmm. Assembly, in its mm-hmm. 85th plenary meeting. They adopted resolution on December the 22nd of 1989. They adopted resolution 44-236, and following the direction of its December the 11th, 1987 resolution, of 42-169, and folks, you can go to the United Nations UN.org website and look these up for yourself. It's 44-236, 42-169. The United Nations proclaimed the International Decade for Natural Disaster Reduction, which began on January the 1st of 1990 and terminated on December the 31st, 1999. And if you'll remember, that is Y2K. And so it was a much heralded and feared yet toothless non-event. But nevertheless, Wednesday, October the 11th of 2006, the day I wrote this paper, was the International Day for Natural Disaster Reductions. Now, continuing, the Annex to Resolution 44-236 had as its first objective and goal to reduce through concerted international action, especially in developing countries, the loss of life, property damage, and social and economic disruption caused by natural disasters. And I read the whole list to you, all the way down to grasshoppers and locusts. It continues through the resolution 44-236 to improve the capacity of each country to mitigate the effects of natural disasters expeditiously and effectively, the establishment of early warning systems and disaster-resistant structures when and where needed. And these United Nations resolutions continue, and they continue to today. And so what we can look at in this topic is that we have global initiatives that are being implemented on a local level, and for the United States of America, FEMA is the go-between, and in the counties, there's another layer of government. They are known in many counties as the Regional Council of Governments. We have them here in Missouri. They're in many counties. They're in many all across the United States. There are these Regional Councils of Government, and it's the Regional Councils of Government that act as the go-between, the mediary, between the international community and your local county commissioners and your local cities and municipalities. These are the places where the grants and aid come flowing. And in order to get in line for these grants and aid, well, we might as well take that grant, because if we don't, someone else will. But it's in order to receive those grant funds, then you have to comply. And the system of compliance begins with 911, and then it goes through the enhanced 911 and right through the way we began the broadcast, step by step by step. And the last step in this thing, one of the last steps in this thing, is the introduction of these codes, of course, and then it goes on to NIMS.
And what it boils down to is this has been a very, very carefully crafted plan over a very long period of time. I personally believe that on the local level it can be stopped, exposed, but don't depend on the media. You're going to have to depend on you, and you're going to have to read it for yourself. Otherwise, you won't believe one dang thing we've told you, because it is, does sound so very far-fetched. But for crying out loud, learn about it, find out about it, and do something now.
It is amazing, but I've been aware of it for a while. I am surprised that the code, it was adopted so late, because I know from prior research that this sort of thing has been in the works for a long time. It's just a matter that they didn't really codify it until that point. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's been planned for a long time. It just it's like the smiley face on the ogre is dropping off a piece at a time. Melody, have you ever heard of a bigger scam than this, with one exception?
There's a lot of big scams, but this is really big.
Okay, $21 trillion just in residential housing.
$21 trillion.
Yeah, that's what Bob Chapman said the total residential housing was worth. But that is, can you imagine any larger scam?
Okay, but they're going to try to blame it on the mortgage thing.
No. Okay, the Federal Reserve is the biggest, single largest scam, and I learned about that in 65.
Okay.
Before there was even books written about it, my dad knew two of the chiefs of staff during World War II. But the bottom, he knew everybody in the whole world. I do believe, from Charleston, West Virginia. What I'm trying to tell you is this is a means by which they can steal every piece of private property in the United States or wherever it's adopted.
Okay, and I guess I kind of spoke out incorrectly on the way I stated that before, anyways. Because, I realize it's just part of a piece in the puzzle.
It's one huge scam designed to totally rip us off and herd us into hog pens and chicken coops. It's the way I look at it on the macro scale. But when I first ran across it, I couldn't believe it. And I've seen an awful lot of technical scams and everything else in the world. I won't bore you with the details. But the bottom line is, when I got a hold of this, I couldn't believe what I was reading. And I read it again and again. I finally got a hold of an attorney and said, would you read this? There's one fellow I know in the state of West Virginia, he has two PhDs in law, and he had never heard of this silly thing. And he works at the State House.
Well, let me jump in one more time, because I can see that the time is sliding away from us. We may have to go to a quick break here. But, again, if we go back to the hazard mitigation plan, this is where the codes come in. I'll just read it from you, right out of the hazard mitigation plan that was written for McDonald County, Missouri, by the Harry S. Truman Coordinating Council, one of these regional councils of government. This is the objective 2.3. Action step 2.3.1, promote mutual agreement among the county and all incorporated areas that establishes the minimum requirements of the international building codes.
Bingo.
Now, what we're dealing with here is a hazard mitigation plan. This is a floodplain issue. This is a natural disasters issue. But because the county wants money, because the county wants to have help after a windstorm event or an ice storm or a heavy snowfall or some other event, because the county has exhausted its means and they want a snowplow or they want chainsaws or other equipment, they will then enter into this hazard mitigation planning process or this program. But it's the things that are placed inside the hazard mitigation plan that point the county towards comprehensive planning and zoning, building codes, and all of the rest of this tyranny. This is where it comes in. They didn't say to promote a mutual agreement among the county and all incorporated areas that establishes codes. No, they specify the international building codes from FEMA.
Sounds good.
If you're going to take the money from the beast, then the beast is going to tell you how you're going to dance. And so the idea is to just say no, become vocal local, and listen to my broadcast on a daily basis, and you can get the rest
of it.
Oh,
yes. And that's it. Well, go ahead and say it's on...
on Republic Broadcasting Network, and you can find that at... We're on the web at www.republicbroadcasting.org. Again, my name is William Roberts. I'm on the air Monday through Friday. I host a broadcast titled Become Vocal Local, and it airs from 10 o'clock until 11 o'clock each day.
That's Central Time.
And that's Central Time. And if you have questions or comments or you want to get a hold of me in regards to this, you can send me an email at host@vocallocal.org. That's host@vocallocal.org. And whether you're a county commissioner, a planning commission member, someone from the emergency group there in Salida, in Chaffee County, or anywhere in the listening audience, if you have any questions about any of the things we've talked about, send me an email. I've worked with many people, private and public, public-private partnership, you know, and I will be more than happy to answer any questions. So it's host@vocallocal.org.
Well, you too. I really do appreciate your coming on, and I hope that we can have you back again, because this is just one of the avenues that I know that you're kind of up on, and you're just a wealth of information, and I really appreciate your speaking out, Jim, because it really does take people that will stand up and speak out.
Well, I just hope I don't get whacked over this. I'm serious.
I'm
serious.
It's getting interesting in these days and times for anybody that tries to bring to light some issues that, you know.
I won't bore you with the flack I've sustained so far.
Well, it takes some brave people out there speaking out so that the rest of us are aware of some of the pitfalls that are out there, and this is a big one.
My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge, so it's just up to us, Melody, to get the information out, and so that everyone understands that really knowledge is power. But it's powerful only when it's combined with action. And so we brought some information, and now it's time for action.
Well, again, I want to thank you and have a good evening.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Okay.
You made it better.
Okay. Thank you again. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.